Continue in our study of the book of Revelation. Now we're jumping into chapter 13 here this morning. Remember, in chapter 12 was the big conflict in heaven. This, when that period of time comes, and it has not come yet, we will reach the moment when Lucifer no longer has access to the throne room. It's very important for us to remember that he does at this point. He still does. That's why heaven needs to be remade, as we've talked about in the past. There needs to be a new heaven and a new earth, because there's rebellion even there. And we know that the very, you know, names that, as we've talked about, Satan, which we've, of course, have identified as not a name. It's an adjective. It's a description of something. It is the adversary. That's who he is, the enemy. But he's also the accuser of the brethren, which is what devil means, by the way. And that tells us that this is what he does. And we're going to see later on that, that this has been his role all along, is to stand before the throne of God and to point out all of our shortcomings and failures. And if you're like me, you have lots of them. He probably spends a lot of time before the throne on behalf of me, pointing and saying, you see that guy? Do you see what he just thought? Do you see what he just did? Do you see what he said? How can you possibly think that he is anyone in particular to use as a leader? But at that time, we know that John teaches us in one of his epistles that we have that advocate. We have Jesus who stands on our behalf, and he pleads our case, because there's nothing that we do, have done, or will do that he doesn't already know. That's just the way that it is. And he has loved us anyway. That's the great thing about the love of the Lord. That's why we talk about the English word love, and it's so misunderstood when you actually look at what the Greek means, because for us, love is an emotion. But love in the scripture is not an emotion. It is a choice. It's an act of the will. It's the Greek word agape, and it simply means to love unconditionally, to love sacrificially, and to love intentionally. There's nothing in that that says that it only extends itself if it receives in return. That's the kind of love that the Lord has for us. It's the kind of love that put him on the cross. It's the kind of love that Jesus said when he scribed John 3:16, probably one of the most, you know, favorite passages in all of Scripture. For God so agape the world that he gave his son, knowing fully that this was a world that would reject him, that would not listen. And obviously 2,000 years later, very little has changed. So the accuser of the brethren at some point in the future will be literally tossed out of heaven. We know this. Michael the archangel is going to do this. It's not going to be a physical conflict like we understand. This is a spiritual realm. They will simply take a stand against the adversary, and he will just no longer find his place there. But when he comes down now and his ministry switches, and I don't really want to call it a ministry, but that's technically what it is. He's coming to this earth, and we know that he's enraged. And the reason is not because he's kicked out of heaven. It's because he knows that his time is very short. And so that is where we were in chapter 12. And he goes after Israel, as we're going to see this morning. He has done throughout world history. When we understand world history, we understand that it is all about God and his covenant. It is not about the nation of Israel, because they're better than anyone else. It's not about the nation of Israel. It's about the God of Israel. It's about the covenant of Israel, and it's about the Messiah of Israel. That's why it's significant. It's not about the Jews per se as themselves. It's about their God. And everything that the enemy has done throughout world history has been to thwart the plan of God. He has to stop it, because he knows that it's his defeat. It's his demise. And so he's going to throw everything he can to try to stop that. So now that we ended with chapter 12 and he's been tossed out of heaven, when we looked at the beginning, we looked at the first two verses of chapter 13. And we're going to go ahead and sort of start there. We're going to pick up on those verses again, because we're going to look at them from a slightly different angle this morning. And what I want to do is I want to show you how this has worked throughout world history. Because when we understand history, then it will help us to understand, in particular in the things of God, about what's coming in the future. Because it literally lays out. And it's important for us to remember that history is his story. It's all about him. It always has been.
And everything that man who shakes his fist in and tries to create other gods and religions and all of this kind of stuff, and even, you know, other fields of understanding that deny that there is this God. We read the passage just a couple of weeks ago in Psalm chapter 2 that God laughs. He just and then he makes a mockery of these people who think that, you know, that they can come up with some scientific means or some human means to sort of replace God. I mean, after all, he's just a myth and so on and so forth. And the scripture says, well, that's in Psalm, the book of Psalm, long before Jesus walked this earth, told us that. But God is still God, and he's not worried one word about it, and it doesn't bother him because he knows the heart of man. And that's the heart of man. And that's why God works in his people to try to get us to change and see the other perspective, which is why we gather on a regular basis to try to figure out how to do that, right? So we looked at those first two verses. So we're going to take a look at them again. But I want to start looking now at this thing to understand his story. In other words, history, to see what God has done. It has been said, I think most of us are familiar in here with the phrase, those who don't know history are what? You're doomed to repeat it. Has man learned anything in his history? Are you kidding me? Study the history of the world. All of these people that say there is no God, the world has gone precisely the way that God said it would go. He has let man make his own choices. Okay, you want to make your own decisions, do your own thing? There you go. And look at the world. In 2018, it's so much better than it was 1,000 years ago, isn't it? Are you serious? Nobody in their right mind would say that. So you know, that's what happens when man says, you know what, God, we've got better things to do than to worry about you. In fact, we don't even believe you. And so we're going to go about this our own way. And God said, okay, all right. And he's allowed it to do it. He created us in his image and likeness, right? That means with the freedom to choose. He's not going to force this on anybody. The truth is presented. You're either going to accept it or you're not. It's just that simple. So with all of this in mind, we're going to start here. Now, we talked about, like I said, last week, we looked at the first couple of verses here. So we're going to start here in verse 1, and then we're going to read what John is saying. Notice the then here now follows chapter 12, the booting out of Lucifer. And we know what we said. He's now here. At this juncture, which is, of course, still future to us. And he is going to once again go after the nation of Israel. But God is going to protect Israel, as he always has. There was no nation on earth in human history that has ever been in the position that Israel was in. Zero. Zero. A dead nation for almost 2,000 years is now a nation. A dead language for almost 2,000 years is now a language again. We talk about it all the time. All of this stuff. Name that from any other group or people group or language in world history. Can't do it. Because it doesn't exist. So there's something here. God is communicating something. So the then here is following all of this stuff. And because Lucifer couldn't get the church, or couldn't get Israel, he goes after her offspring. That's you and I. That's the Gentiles. God will protect them. Now this is not the church. Okay, that's a whole other thing. We'll get into that. We're talking about those that believe during this period of time. So that's the period now that the then picks up. Okay, so it's at that point. Then I stood on the sand of the sea. Now, we talked about this. When you look at sea in the scripture, oftentimes, and you can tell by the context, if it's talking about the physical sea. I mean, it's standing on the shoreline, blah, blah, blah. It's talking about the physical sea. There are other times when the word sea is used, when it is used metaphorically. In other words, it's a sign or a symbol of something other, but it describes something. And we talked last week about this, how the sea is consistently through the scripture, it refers to humanity, okay? And that's what I saw. And I saw a beast, okay? So there's a singular beast coming out of the sea, out of humanity, okay? So there's a person that's coming, that's going to rise out of humanity, and we're going to see he's not a very good dude. Okay, I mean, he's just not. And what we know today, we call him the Antichrist. As I've said a million times in the past, I call him Big Mouth, because that's basically what he is. And we're going to see why I use that here this morning. But so John sees this beast, this individual that's rising up out of the sea. But notice he's equated with a beast. Okay, he's something that just has its instincts are to destroy, to just feed upon other things. That's just what they do. That's why the word beast is used. But these are some interesting things about this beast. It's just not a normal beast. He has seven heads. Well, we know, and again, in the scripture, heads, when it's used in the plural, obviously it's not speaking of physical, okay, because we don't have two heads. So it's clearly speaking of something else. And of course, we know, as we've talked about, it always refers to nations, the heads, okay? And then there were horns, and the horns speak of the kings or the rulers. For most of world history, it has been kings, but there's, of course, been emperors, there's been pharaohs, there's been Caesars, there's been blah, 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 you know, fill in the blank. And they've all just done really, really well, which is why their nations and their empires are still with us today. No, not so much. So there's the seven heads, and then there's the ten horns, which are kings, and on his horns, ten crowns. And this speaks of authority. Power, strength is the idea. So even though there's only seven, the power amongst them is shared with three others. We're going to get to that later on as we move through the book of Revelation. And then on his heads, and here it is, notice on the heads, on the nations, a blasphemous name. We don't know what this name is. It's pointless to try to figure it out. But whatever it is, it's offensive. Because that's what blasphemy means, to speak evil of, to speak against. All right, that's the idea of blasphemy. Now, what we're going to see here, we're going to start focusing on the fact that there are seven heads. Imagine that. Now, we've talked many, many times about this in church here as we look at the scripture. Remember, the number seven does not mean perfect. It means complete. So perfection is a result of something that's being complete because it's done, right? But we get this again from Genesis chapters 1 and 2 with the 7 days of creation. Then God saw that all was good and he rested. It was complete. The work was finished. That's where we get this from. So this idea of perfection was added in later. And that's not what the number seven means. And so we've said that this number seven, whether we're talking about the seven churches, whether we're talking about the seven letters, the seven letters to the churches, the seven seals, the seven trumpets, the seven voices, all of the stuff, everything is done in Revelation in sevens. Because Revelation is the culmination of everything that comes before. Therefore, it's the completion. It brings to a conclusion everything. So with these nations, since there's seven of them, it tells us the complete picture of world history. Interestingly enough, we study history in school, we study it in colleges and universities, we study it everywhere, but we never seem to want to look at history from the biblical standpoint. And do you know the only one that's actually accurate? It's the Bible. The others are a guessing game, and that's why you'll find conflict in some of the historical accounts. So we're going to look at these seven heads, these nations that will complete the reign of man on this planet. That's what's being described here. There are seven kingdoms, and he never did get it figured out. But there's a kingdom that's coming that will. And of course, that's the kingdom of Messiah. That's the Lord's kingdom that he will bring to the earth. So we're going to start looking at these sevens. I'm going to read this verse, and then we're going to go back and talk about it just a little bit more. Now notice, and we looked at this last week. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. Now I know this sounds voodoo-ish to us. I get it. But what's being described here, we know from last week that these types of beasts, types of animals, wild animals, are very descriptive of particular nations. Okay? So we saw this beast that nobody has seen yet. We've seen a part of it in the past. We haven't seen the whole thing yet. But then there's a leopard. We're going to talk about that, so don't worry about that. And his feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth was like the mouth of a lion. So this is not some grotesque-looking figure that artists are trying to depict. What's being described here is the character of the nations that have come within this world. There's only four here. There are others. We're going to be talking about those. So hang on just a second. Now notice what happens. The beast, the leopard, the bear, and the lion, the dragon, and we know who the dragon is. That's Lucifer. That's who we just got through talking about. Remember, he's been thrown to earth now. So that's who the dragon is, the serpent, the devil, the accuser of the brethren, the adversary. We could go on and on. The dragon gave him, that is the beast, because it's the beast which I saw, and he had the form of all of these other things, but we're describing the beast. So all these other things are describing who this beast is. Where does this beast get its authority? From the dragon. Imagine that. The dragon gave him his power. Now notice, his throne and great authority. So this nation that's going to come, which is going to sort of be a compilation of all of the other nations throughout world history, they're all going to sort of come together, and we're going to see why that's happening in a moment. And what I'm going to show you is you're watching it happen today. That's actually been happening for quite a while. But if you're paying attention, you're watching this kingdom develop as we speak. In fact, it's here. It's not coming. It's here. It hasn't taken on its full authority yet, as you see. That's not quite there. But notice that the dragon gives him his power, his throne, and his authority. So whoever this guy is that represents all of these nations that have come before it, he's a bad dude. Okay? There's nothing been equaled like this in world history. Period. End of story. There just hasn't. Many commentators try to equate this with some historical figure from the past. One of the Caesars, Domitian, for instance. Maybe Augustus Nero was often brought up. Or you could go back and look at, you know, Nebuchadnezzar, blah, 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 and all of these guys. And it's just, though they had power, they did not have power of the whole earth. They didn't. They had power of regions. Now, we know that they ruled, and you know, they called themselves world rulers, but none of those kingdoms ruled the world as a whole, whereas this guy will. Every tribe, tongue, and nation, we're going to see in just a minute. So this is not a normal ruler. This is not some historical person that you can put on here. And Antiochus Epiphanes, for an example. You just can't do it. Nothing fits. Nobody fits. Hitler. I mean, whatever. I mean, he tried to get a hold of the world. Didn't work out so well. But anyways, so this is what's going on. Now, what I want to show you is this number seven and this thing and how this works. Now, it's going to seem a little weird, but I'm going to explain this. So the beast now is the sixth kingdom of the seven. Okay? Remember we talked about last week, John, from where John stands when he sees these things, when God gives him the ability to see these things, he's standing from his position looking backwards. He's looking through history. He's looking back. When we saw last week, we looked at Daniel, and we saw that Daniel, who lived 500 years before Jesus, was just the opposite. He named these same kingdoms, and I know many of us are familiar with them, but he named them looking forward. For him, they were the future. John, they were the past. So they're reversed in John, because John's looking this way. Daniel was looking that way. So if you line these things up, you look at the, you know, you can see how it works out. So we're looking back because we're looking through history from John's perspective. So that's the sixth beast. The fifth beast was, which I saw was like a leopard. And then, of course, if you keep going, had the feet of a bear. That's the fourth empire. And then, of course, the lion is the third. Now there are two more, and we're going to see those here in just a second. But the reason that those two, even though they're a part of the seven, are not a part of this particular aspect of it is because they're two empires or kingdoms of the past that were never in control of A, Jerusalem, or of B, of all of the Jews. Okay? We're going to see that that's Egypt and Assyria. Neither one of them controlled Jerusalem or the Jews. The Assyrians controlled a lot of the Jews, but they didn't get the southern tribes, the tribes of David, tribes of Judah, in other words. And then the Egyptians, they ruled the people of Israel before they were a people. And in our Wednesday study in the book of Exodus, we've talked many times about the fact that when the 70 under Jacob went into Egypt, because Joseph had been there, that they went in as tribes. Okay, there was only 70 that went in. 400 years later, there's over 2 million of them. Okay. And they exit, that's the Exodus, and there's still, it's just a massive quantity of the tribes until they get to Sinai. And the moment God gives them his law, his Torah, and he gives them the instruction on how to worship him in the tabernacle, and how they're to come to him through the priest and order and stuff like this, and what this means to them through the feasts and the sacrificial system, when they receive those things, they change from being the tribes of Israel to becoming the nation of Israel. That's the change. So when Egypt was in control, there was no nation of Israel. There were the tribes of Israel. Assyria, there were the nations of Israel, but Assyria only conquered the northern tribes as, quote unquote, the 10 lost tribes. Okay, so there's four. So let's take a look at this. So now remember, here's what we're saying. John is seeing backwards. He's looking back through history. Okay, and we know that history now, we've already understood now, is his story. So we've looked at these six. So this is what we see. What John is seeing here in his day was the first part of the empire of Rome. Now, it's going to return, okay? At least parts of it. Actually, parts of all of these will. And who was the person that of Rome that actually started all of this stuff? I mean, Caesar Augustus was... Julius Caesar was the first, and then there was Augustus, and so on and so forth. And they all were the Roman Empire, but they had the Jews in Jerusalem, remember? And Tiberius, when Jesus was here, Tiberius was ruling, but the Jews were still in Jerusalem and had control of the temple. So you can't equate them with that. But in 70 AD, it was Titus Vespasian, the Roman emperor, that marched on the city of Jerusalem. And remember, the Roman army was made up of nations that they had conquered. And we talked about this before. Who was the armies? He had the 5th, the 10th, the 12th legions, or what he used to come against the Jews in 70 AD. And those were the nations that Rome had conquered. And guess who it was? It was the Syrians. It was the people that we know today as the Lebanese. It was the Iraqis and it was the Iranians. Because that's what Rome did. They conquered and they used all of those nations and the people that we would know today. They conquered Asia Minor. And so the people that marched on Jerusalem in 70 AD were from Turkey, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Jordan, Lebanon. Anybody see a parallel here? Hello. Okay. That's why I said the Roman Empire sort of disintegrated. It wasn't ever conquered. It just sort of floated away. But it's going to be revived because all of those nations we just described are all of the nations that are all a part of this whole thing, and it's all tied. We could go on and on. You get the idea. But this is the second. Rome was the second thing of the beast, right? The second time the beast showed. So let's go back. So he's looking backwards, remember? And he said it was like also like a leopard. Now we know, we talked about this last time in the book of Daniel, and we know from world history that the empire that came right before the Roman Empire was that of Greece. And the leopard that had four wings, it was Alexander, because he just swept in like nobody had ever done previous to him, conquered the world, and then he died. So much for conquering. But then his kingdom was divided, the four wings, into four of his generals. We don't need to get into all of that. And so that's what ended up happening. That was the empire right before Greece. The empire right before them was the Persians. Actually, the Medes and the Persians, but the Persians were the stronger. We know the Persians today as who? The Iranians. 1935 was when it changed from being Persia to being Iran. The People's Republic of Japan, the United Republic of Japan, whatever it was. That's when it changed. Not till 1935. They were known as Persia. Okay? And it was Xerxes was the one that really was really hard on the Jews. Let's put it that way. Okay? That's how you say that. It's not Kirkkees. The X is actually pronounced as a Z, so it's Xerxes, okay? excuse me, darn. The kingdom that was before that, of course, was Babylon. But notice, that Babylon, under King Nebuchadnezzar, who, by the way, Saddam Hussein, claimed to be a direct descendant of Nebuchadnezzar. Why? Because Nebuchadnezzar conquered the Jews. Just like Vespasian did. Vespasian conquered the Jews and destroyed the temple, right? That's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar did under Babylon in world history, 586 BC. Okay? But his was not the first Babylon that he ruled. Now we know today, the biblical Babylon was what we know today, the area. In the Bible, it was Mesopotamia. It was called Shinar. It was called a couple other names. But basically, we know and understand it today. As Iraq. Is anybody seeing a pattern here? This is world history, folks. No one can argue this. Nobody. This is world history. These are the empires that ruled the world, because they didn't conquer, obviously, America. America didn't even exist. And they didn't go, you know, all the way up into Europe. These were all guys in what we now know today as the Middle East. Okay? Now, the two that we talked about, those are the four that are named because of their direct correlation to Israel. The next two, the reason I put them in a different color, was Assyria, the empire of Assyria. And their king was Sennacherib, is how you would say that. Bad dude. Okay? He was a bad, bad guy. And he came after the Jews, and he actually wanted to conquer both the 10 tribes of the north and the 2 tribes of the south. In other words, the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah. But he could not get to the 2 in the south. It would be the south would be conquered by Nebuchadnezzar. But the 10 in the north, the nation of Israel, the northern tribes, the 10 northern tribes, they were taken by Nineveh. Thank you, kind sir. We have to start paying this guy more. Should probably start paying him first before we start paying him more. Ah, that's good. I actually have a dang water bottle under here. Don't tell anyone. So Assyria. So that's who they were. I mean, and again, world history. Well, and there was other people. The empire actually got control from the Babylonians from Cyrus and a couple of these other guys, Darius or Darius, some people would say. Anyway, but then the kingdom, first of all, was the kingdom of Egypt. Under Pharaoh Thutmose, that's the king, the Pharaoh, I guess is the better way to say it, the Pharaoh of the oppression, about 1430, 1440 BC. This is the guy, okay? It wasn't Ramses. It wasn't Ramses. And the insane attempts to try to make it Ramses is absurd. But anyways, we won't even get into that because that just drives me up a wall. Thutmose was the guy, okay? So, now, the one thing that all of the seven nations have in common, notice we're using a menorah again, right? You can see the menorah there. The lampstand, right? It was giving light. Light in the scripture, especially from the menorah, which is in the holy place of God, was to illuminate. It speaks of revelation. Ah, imagine that. So what we're seeing is the revelation of world history and how it works, and yet we have a kingdom to go. So we're going to see, if you notice that the menorah, there's one missing. We're going to look at that in just a second. But then there's a base. There's a common thread that runs through every single one of these nations. And it's running through what is now being attempted to be put into action today. And we're going to see what that common thread is. And you're watching it all around you. Don't think that this gender issue and all of the other issues of our day are new. They are not new. They have their origins, and they have their origins in long, long ago. They've just reared their ugly head again. The scripture is very clear. There is nothing new under heaven. So this thing, we were just talking about this the other day now in colleges, in some colleges anyway. You can no longer say he and she. Now what is it, yo and zen and yo? I think it's zen and yo. Yeah, can't say he and she. To which I say, now let me explain this. Is a yo is the bigger person, right? Yes. And did I say yo? Anyway, whatever. You get the idea. The other one is not. Yes. So you identify them by... one is zen and whatever it is, and one is yo, right? Yes. Anybody miss that? Are we not still identifying them as different? There's two groups, folks. People that look like this are these. People that look like this are those. Okay. I'm not seeing the organization of this, because you still have two groups that are being identified separately. So why can't we just, I don't know, call them he and she, him and her? I don't know, call me crazy. But I mean, the absurdity of this is staggering. Staggering. But it's not new. Oh, it's just of 2018 and the millennials, right? Snowflakes. It's just the millennials that have come up with this. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's all coming from this foundation, this base. We're going to look at that in just a minute. Now, here's what John says, and here's an interesting passage. I saw one of its heads. So one of the kingdoms, okay? One of the nations, I'm sorry, that's ruled by a king. And I saw one of its heads as if it had been mortally wounded. In other words, it looked like it was dead. But its deadly wound was healed. Oh, so immediately, what does that tell us? There's a resurrection. A resurrection of what? A resurrection of who? We're watching it happen. You're watching the resurrection of this thing that we're going to get to here if I stop yakking enough. And all the world marveled. And that's exactly what the world will do. When this event happens, the whole world will go, can you believe it? People are going to say, oh, we listened to YouTube and we heard that Rick guy in Mesquite say there in May of 2018 that there's never been a nation that has come back from the dead except Israel. What did we just read? Oh, it's a nation that's coming back and its ruler. Who is this? Because it represents, we haven't seen it yet. But the whole world is going to marvel. Oh, look at that. And everybody's going to go after it. And you're already watching it happen, folks. I'm telling you. You got to start viewing the news, the newspapers, the internet, whatever it is, form of media you look at, it doesn't matter. Start viewing it from the scripture and it will make a lot more sense than what these yo-yos who got to have their hair just right and wear makeup on camera are trying to tell you. Because the reality of it is, they're just as confused as you are. They don't know history any better than you do. You don't have to know history to become a news reporter. Are you kidding me? You don't. You listen to everybody that has come before you, and then you measure your thoughts, and then you go on screen and you talk about it as if you're some sort of an authority, which is what these people always do. That's why we have them on TV telling us that the Arabs are everybody in the Middle East that's not a Jew, which is absolute absurdity. That's a ridiculous thing to say. The Iranians, who are Persian, are not Arab. But they're very much opposed to Israel. The Egyptians, like the Persians or the Iranians, are not Arabs. They're not. They're Egyptian. No one ever points this out. But to the news, it's the Arabs. So it's the Arabs, it's the Jews, and it's the Christians. They can't conceive of the fact that there are Christian Jews. It boggles their minds. Anyways, we could go on and on with that, but like I said, I'm running myself out of time. So I saw one of its heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed who? The beast. Because this has all happened because of outside, now see if this doesn't sound familiar, of an outside power that has given life back to someone who people marvel at. It's funny, when the Lord was resurrected, to this day, most of the world, by far, most of the world, I don't care where you're talking about or anything, reject the resurrection of Jesus Christ. There we go. But notice what's happening. And the world here, the Greek word, doesn't just mean the Middle East, like the kingdom of Iraq, the kingdom of Persia, you know, that just controls. The world here means the globe. So this is global. This is not regional like the empires that those guys ruled. So this one is very, very different than the ones that have preceded. But it's related to one that came before it. Now, here's our sixth and seventh beast. Because one is dead, right? And one is coming back. Notice it doesn't describe for us which one. It's just telling us one of them was. And I said back then that the concept of Rome is going to come back again. So here's where we've already been. Now let's take a look at this. There's the third Babylon. And now this is my number system. Don't go, you know, looking for it in the scripture. You're not going to find it. I'm just trying to explain it in a way that it sort of makes sense. But it's also a combination, not just of Babylon, but of Rome. And I already said, we're watching Rome reunited today. Don't think the Catholic Church. Stop. Stop thinking that. That's not what's being described. This is a nation with an emperor. Okay? I know there's some comparisons. But this will be ruled not by Domitian Alexander Ahasuerus. I forgot to change it there. That's another name for Xerxes. Sorry about that. Nebuchadnezzar, Sennacherib, or Pharaoh. This one is going to be ruled by the beast who we know as Antichrist, AC, the arrogant one. Okay? And this is the third time the beast has showed up. So, as I said, all seven of these nations, because this now is the seventh, so it completes the nations of the world who stand opposed to God, not Israel. Now, they are opposed to Israel because of the people of God, but it's about God. It's about the covenant. What do they all have in common? Well, the basis for them all is Babylon, the very first one, back recorded for us all the way back in Genesis chapter 10. And we read there, and I'm just going to sort of paraphrase all of this, that the people all spoke a single language. These are all the descendants of the three sons of Noah, right? At this time, they're all still together. And that is the descendants of Shem, which becomes Sem, which become what we called the Semitic peoples. Okay? Semitic peoples. And it's not just the Jews. Okay? Saudi Arabia, Yemen, are descendants of Shem because they're descendants of Abraham. Why do you think they rever Abraham? Because he's their descendant. Well, now let me get this straight. If the Jews are descendants of Abraham and the Arabs know fully well that they're the descendants of Abraham as well, then how can one be Semitic and the other be anti-Semitic? Aren't they both, since they're descendants of Shem, Semitic? Anybody ever tell you that? No, but that is what the reality. They know it. We don't. And neither apparently do our commentators or our historians. It's just the absurdity of this is just mind-boggling. So that's the sons of Shem. Now, the sons of Japheth, we know what happened. At this point, they're all in this one place in the land of Shinar, by the way, which is Iraq. But they're all together. The descendants of Shem, this is down the road now, so there's many of them. Then there's descendants of Japheth, right? And they're all there. And then there's the descendants of Ham, and they're all there. They all speak in one language. They're all there. But they have a leader. They have a guy that rises up who's a grandson of Ham, one of the sons of Noah. So he's a great-grandson of Noah. And his name is none other than Nimrod. That's what Genesis 10 calls him. And we know what happens. He was a great warrior, you know, in the sight of the Lord. What you don't understand is that's terrible English translation. What it says is Nimrod was an arrogant one in defiance of the Lord. Notice what his name means. Chief rebel. That's what Nimrod means. Yo, Nimrod, you. So I can call my children that now, you Nimrod, when they're being rebellious, right? It's biblical after all. Anyway, that's who Nimrod was. And he was in defiance of God. And then he goes to the valley of Shinar. Pay attention now. Valley of Shinar. And what does he do? He gets all the people together and he says, hey, here's what we got to do. We got to build a temple that reaches into the heavens. Now, if you're going to build a temple that reaches into heaven, so I don't know, shouldn't you start on a mountain instead of a valley? What they were trying to do was, we all seen with the sci-fi Stargate, that's what they were trying to do. And if you think that's wacky, go to Sedona, Arizona, because that's what they think. They think Sedona, Arizona is one of those gateways. So people say, well, that's just absurd that the Bible teaches that. Really? What are you going to tell all those folks over there in Sedona? We talked about last week. People in Kanab think that. So, what? But that's what they were doing. So it was in defiance of God. We're going to get everybody together. We're going to make a name for ourselves. And we're going to build a tower and it's going to go all the way to heaven. We're going to make a way for heaven and earth to join. That's what they're trying to do. The supernatural with the natural. And if you don't think they're still trying that, you're nuts. It's still happening today. So all the occult stuff, there's programs on and ghosts and all that stuff, and all the interest in the supernatural. Where do you think that comes from? Anyway, so his name was Nimrod, and he got all these people together, and God said, no. And so while they were going to work together and make a name for themselves, what does God do? He confuses the languages. So the descendants of Shem, even in their clans, they broke up and they can't continue to speak to one another. The languages have been changed. The descendants of Japheth, they can't start speaking to one another. Descendants of Ham, same thing. You get the Egyptians out of that. You get the Ethiopian out of that. You get Moroccan out of that. You get blah, blah, blah. We could go on and on. That's what you get. Kenyan, African, Swahili. That's part of one of the languages that came from Babel. And of course, that's why we call it Babel. And we say when somebody's speaking something we can't understand, what do we still call it? Babbling. Where do you think that comes from? It's like, good grief, people, wake up. Anyway, so all of these people, they're like, well, they're talking, so they're like, well, we can't accomplish anything now. And you can't. If you can't communicate, you can't work. You can't work together. So they break into their little groups, and then they go and they settle their areas. The descendants of Ham go and settle in today what we know as North Africa and become the African nations as they filter down all the way through. Mitzrayim becomes Egypt. Cush becomes Ethiopia. Not the Ethiopia we know today, but that area, Sudan, Somalia, that area, kind of stuff like that. Put becomes Libya. We could go on and on. You get the idea. So they filter down and they go down there. The Semites, end up staying in that particular area. And some of them settle down into now what we know as Arabia, okay, which was called the Arabah in those days. And they settled in that area. And because what happened is the people that could understand together, they got together and they moved out. They packed up their RVs and off they went. Right? Well, we can only understand this group of people. Well, we got 25 RVs here. Let's go find a place to live. There's a phone ringing. Someone answer that, please. It's the Lord calling. He's saying, Rick, get on with it. Anyway, so it's Nimrod. So that's what happens. Now, the interesting one, and many of us know this, Japheth and his brood, okay, they're like, they started to understand each other, and they said, that's it. So they started moving north. And they settled in, of course, we've talked about this before. They initially settled between the Caspian and the Black Sea in a region of mountains called the Caucasus Mountains. And then from there, they filtered on into today what we now call Europe. And that's why you and I are called Caucasian. Because we originated as descendants of Japheth from the Caucasus region. The world will never tell you that. The news will never tell you that. Your history books will never tell you that. But it is what it is. And that's what ended up happening. So God said he put a stop to what Nimrod was doing. So Nimrod obviously lost his thing, although he was obviously a very powerful individual. Later on in chapter 14 of the same book, Genesis 14, Abraham runs about what's called the War of the Kings in Genesis chapter 14. We won't get into all of this, but one of them's name is Amraphel. And most scholars believe, as I do, that Amraphel is none other than Nimrod. And Abraham basically whoops up on him. Okay? Notice that what Amraphel means, to speak darkness, that's what the name means. Now, who is this guy and how does this all connect? Well, if you understand astrology, if you understand what occultism is, if you understand what drugs in the sense of using them for incantations and things like that, they all trace back to one area. And the belief in many gods, and we could go on and on. All of the stuff that is opposed to the scripture has its origin where? In Babylon. That's where it all started. We're going to see in Revelation chapter 17 that's going to be called the whore, all right, the mother of harlots and of all adulteries. That's because all these nations are tied back to Babylon. They all have parts of Babylon in them. Because remember, in those days when a nation conquered another nation, they absorbed everything that nation had. They absorbed its gods as well. They believed their gods were stronger. That's why they were the conqueror, but they still embraced those gods. So when Assyria became the ruling agent, they got everything that Egypt had, and so they adopted that. So this is all passed down. Now, here's where it gets interesting, because this shouldn't surprise us, because history has taught us, and when we look at these ancient writings, even though our modern day minds don't understand it, the people of what we would call old times, they certainly did. And they wrote about this guy. And you know what they called him? Gilgamesh. That was his name. Now, if you're not familiar with this, there's a writing they say, and they're wrong. The oldest writing in the world is the Epic of Gilgamesh. Ever heard of that? It's the story of Gilgamesh, and he gets hooked up with this guy. There was a wild beast. Imagine that. And they get together, and they fight, and they realize that they can't, so they become long-lost friends. And then they go on a journey, and they're fighting against all of the gods. All these supernatural encounters and all of this stuff. And then Enkidu ends up dying, and Gilgamesh is sad and heartbroken, and so he goes, and because he thought him and Enkidu were immortal, because they had been told so by some of the gods. Think Genesis chapter 6, Nephilim, we'll just leave that at that. And that's what's going on, because Enoch tells us all about this. And then they go on, and so now when Enkidu dies, Gilgamesh says, well, apparently we're not immortal, we were lied to. And so he seeks out a fellow by the name of, and here's one for you, here's one to name your next kid, Up-Naptashim. And he goes and he sits down and has a discussion with Up-Naptashim. Up-Naptashim, sorry. Now, that's a name for you. That's a Sumerian Akkadian. Yeah, I had to write it down because I just make sure I could pronounce it. And he sits down and he tells, now, see if you've heard this before. So Gilgamesh sits down with Upi. I'm just going to call him Upi. Not Opie now. That's the different movie. Upi here. And he sits down with him and he says, no, man was not meant to live immortal. Man was meant to die. And his reliance is upon the grace and the mercy and the compassion of God. And he says, and we know this because God sent a deluge onto the world and destroyed that which was opposed to him. And there are certain people, and this is really butchered, but basically, and there are only a few that are going to understand this. And will you be one of these people? Who do you think he might have been talking to? Noah. And he took this stuff and he passed this on. You see, I read some stuff and watched a video on this morning from the world's perspective. They say, because the Epic of Gilgamesh in their minds, and they're wrong, is the oldest writing in the world, that the Bible and the story of Noah is just another telling of the Epic of Gilgamesh. That's what the world teaches. Because you know, and hopefully you understand it, in all ancient writings, I don't care which one you're talking about, they all talk about a flood. And that flood and the gods spared 8 people, every single one. So the critic says, well, the Bible is just one more of those. But the reality is, the Bible is the truth, and all of those are tales of the truth, twisted, much like Christianity has become today. Because the oldest writing in the world, and now they're proving it as we speak, they're finding out, guess which language? Hebrew. Imagine that. And they're finding, because at Babel, 70 nations went out, that if you look at all the languages of all of the nations, they all trace back to a single origin. Huh. What a shocker that is. Because all the people spoke one language. That language was Hebrew, folks. And we're finding the discoveries to prove that now. So don't buy into this garbage. Bible is not another view of the Epic of Gilgamesh. The Epic of Gilgamesh is a version of the Bible, which is wrong. Okay? It's just the opposite. But that's who this guy is, Gilgamesh. And he's to the Sumerians and the Akkadians. And we're talking some ancient people groups here. Holy smokes. Okay? If you saw the Scorpion King, okay, he was Akkadian. Just kidding. So you didn't know the rock was that old, did you? Well, yeah, I'm telling you, he was that old. Okay, he might have known Gilgamesh for all we know. But anyway, so that's who he was known to. Now notice the nations that he's known to. These are what we would call Middle Eastern nations. But he had other names. And I could have picked a ton, but I wanted to show you one that you might be familiar with. In Egypt, he was known as Osiris. Same guy. So when the Tower of Babel split up and all those people went their way because of the language, where they took the legend of who Nimrod was, and they took it and they twisted it and it became all of these things that we now know today, and we could go on and on and on. But all of this, the world history is all here, and it all found its foundation in what began at Babel as a rebellion against God. We will make our way and we will make a name for ourselves in the heavens. Has anything changed? Modern man thinks he has made his name. He thinks he's made his mark because we have science. And the only thing that science is showing is that, well, I don't know, the Bible was right. Now, on the 20th, as Trav said, Dr. Tom, many of you know him, we bring him in once a year. He's a Christian scientist, and he gets into the whole evolution theory. Anytime you want to argue with somebody about that, or they want to argue with you, just remind them it's a theory. It's not like gravity. That's a fact. It's not like thermodynamics. That's a fact. Evolution is a theory. There's a reason, because it's not accurate. So anyway, so he comes and he shares and helps us to sort of understand all of this stuff from a scientific perspective. And he doesn't really use that big of words. That's what's nice. You can really understand him. Anyway, so in a couple of weeks we'll have him here. World history. It ain't like God has told us not only what has been, what is. He's told us what will be. Because this sixth, seventh empire that is about to emerge on the scene, as I've said multiple times already this morning, we're already watching it. What do you think this Russia, Iran, Syria, and all of this stuff? And you say, well, Iraq is still against them. Yeah, for a while. And then you got Erdogan from Turkey, and you got all of this stuff. I'm telling you, you're watching this happen. Okay? All those kingdoms we just talked about, which all find their roots here in Babel, or in Babylon, the first, which is the origin of all of it, which we're going to see in chapter 17 of Revelation. It's all coming out, and we're watching this kingdom be developed. And the only thing, as I've said before, that they're looking for is one world leader. Got to have that one world leader, somebody who just understands. And if I hadn't run myself out of time, we'd have gone into Daniel and take a look at that. We'll have to look at that next week. Somebody that just understands the world. Just be loving and benevolent, and just, we're going to see when we look at him that he's eloquent in speech, is what Daniel writes. We would call him a silver-tongued devil, and I mean devil. And he's going to know all of the sinister, the Hebrew says, all of the stuff that's dark and hidden. What was his name? Amraphel? Speak darkness? Stuff like that. So I think that's the resurrection that takes place. I think we're going to see Nimrod again. And he's going to do what he's going to attempt one more time to do what he did in Genesis chapter 10. That's what I think. Take it or leave it. It's up to you. It's not just revived Rome. That's part of it, but that is not all. So all of these world nations and all of the people today are looking for somebody to come. They want one world leader. And we have to have a one world religion because, you know, we just can't have diversity like we have today. We can't say he and she anymore. We can't do these things anymore. There's got to be universality. And it's like, really? I mean, are you serious? Anyway, what's going to happen when Yo wants to be called Zen or Zen wants to be called Yo? What are you going to do then? Create a third category? Anyway, and which bathroom does Yo and Zen use? Oh, I'm confused. Because is there a Yen, a Yo, and a Zen? I'm not sure I'm pronouncing these correctly. And then there's a third bathroom, which is a Yo-Zen? I'm confused. I need to know which one to go into. We're heading this direction. Don't want to embarrass myself. It's ridiculous. One world leader, one world religion, right? One world government. One world economy. Folks, you're watching it happen. Even if you're not paying attention, it's happening. It's happening. And there's going to be a system put into place which is going to make it work universal. There's not going to be any more euro. There's not going to be any more dollar or yen or blah, 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 rupees. It's not going to be. It's going to change. They're all trying to get it going. And there are people, really powerful people, working at this. We're watching it happen. Shouldn't surprise us. The scripture is exactly what it said it is. It is truth. So no matter where the world is going, though, why we're here this morning is because we have one world. We have our one world leader. His name is Jesus. Right? And he, unlike this wing nut, has earned the right to lead because out of love, he gave himself. But he won't force any of us. We're going to see another beast come up, and he's going to force everybody to worship this guy. Jesus never forces anyone. It's optional. You don't have to follow him. He doesn't demand obedience. As I've said before, he's the only Lord the world has ever known who never demands anything. We call him Lord, but he doesn't demand anything of us. Because you see, he set the course when he was on this earth. And he prepared us for his return. And we find his final words there in that upper room. So if we can get the folks to come forward and pass out the elements.